Well, welcome to Talking in Stations. I'm Adderall. How are you, Carneros?
Good, good. I'm Carneros. Good morning.
Where's Elise?
I'm over here. I'm down here. I'm at the bottom.
He's not on screen today. Oh, sad.
Well, it's the first Sunday show of the new year, and we've got some action going on in the north. It seems to be getting warmer and warmer, as we say. We're gonna jump in and look at what's going on up there. But we're also gonna take a few minutes to talk about some of our predictions for what we think might be coming up this year. So I'm looking forward to that as we have time at the end of the show.
All right, cool. To help us out today, we have Pandrolica, or Pando as he's known from the initiative.
Hey, hey.
Welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show.
How's it going, Pando?
Going good. Thanks for inviting me.
If you guys don't know, he has his own podcast that's fantastic. That's called FC Chats with Pando. The most recent one was maybe 2 weeks ago with Asher Elias. It was a great show. Loved it. We distribute it here on Talking Stations Network. So you can pick it up where you get your TIS podcast.
Do you, though?
We're a bit behind, I'm afraid. And that's on me. I have them ready. I just need to publish them. We had a bit of a traffic jam with content at the end of the year, and I thought, well, I could put them out, but they'll get buried. So I'm going to catch up this week. Next topic.
But I had to say it.
They're good. How are they going? How do you feel about doing them? And
like when I started those, they actually started as like a fight analysis kind of thing. So I went over footage and then talked about what could be done better, like just my fights. And there's always something, right? And or there's always a lot to talk about. And then slowly it started to, I don't even know. I think Elo wanted to come on first, and then we started this thing. And yeah, and then it became a completely different thing. And the whole fight analysis thing went out the window suddenly, even though I enjoyed that one just the same. So I'm going to bring back the fight analysis next Tuesday. So yeah, and it has been going great. I mean, I enjoyed it. Surprisingly, I enjoy talking about spaceships. Huh? So very easy, and also all the guests so far, very easy to talk to. They all love talking spaceships, I guess.
Yeah, what I like is it's not just, it is of course like the biggest names in Fleet Commanders for EVE Online, which in and of itself is interesting because these guys, any Fleet Commander is somebody who's interesting to talk to. They are. They're super interesting. They're very advanced players. They know the game frontwards and backwards because they have to do so many, they have to make so many decisions so quickly. So right there, you're already winning. And Pando is one of those FCs. So that's bonus. And then, though, it's not restricted to that because you also went and interviewed scouts or helper FCs, which I didn't even know much.
Yeah, I was like, that's not the idea to have like only big names on there or something. It's just, what I think is interesting, like whatever it is. And because it's called FC Chat, that doesn't mean it has always to be FCs only. I might just, have someone, maybe if someone from CCP is going to be on there someday, he's not an FC. So, I just thought in a support FC episode, which you mean, that's one aspect a lot of people don't see. And I think what was interesting about that one too was it gives some people maybe a path they didn't see. So you don't have to be, you don't want to be. Like I would love to say everyone could be, but I don't think most people want to be like a big FC of a null block or whatever. For several reasons. And there are other roles that are very fulfilling and very fun and, just as appreciated by your own guys. And I think that was the most interesting part about that one.
Yeah, we were talking earlier about the health toll that it takes being an FC, and because we're going to have Headliner on today, but he's apparently oversleeping. which is understandable since it's kind of early. What is it, 4 p.m. for him?
Yeah, it's a casual 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah, which is totally understandable. But we're talking about the toll that being an FC is, being insomniacs and just sitting in a chair for hours and hours and hours. And Pando, Elise, you guys are big time FCs or were. How bad is it?
Yeah, I mean, we've all seen the post from Elo, right? So if you take it too far, if you let it take you too far, it can definitely be like a serious, can have a serious.
What was the post from Elo for people who don't know?
You know, I'm not sure if I should talk about it like this here. Maybe someone can just link it or so. I don't know. But so he basically said that he struggled with life and, you know, that it got as serious as it can get. And yeah, he had to, you know, get some help and, or like, you know, quit Eve for that reason. So yeah, there you go. That's how serious it can get. You know, it doesn't mean all your, like everyone who's watching has a main FC and like all the main FCs are struggling that hardcore, but you know, there are sacrifices those guys are doing. So
it's super easy to get sucked into it, right? So you like, you do one fleet and you're like, yeah, this is fun. And like, you get that win and then you get the win for everyone else in your fleet and everyone's like, oh, this is great. And you're like, oh, I want to do more of this. And the next thing you know, like it can spiral to the point where you're staying up until 4 in the morning waiting for a timer to see if you can get a dunk going on. And because you don't want to leave an opportunity just hanging in the ether right there. You want to be able to capitalize on it all the time. So when you're super active like Pando and people like him, like you want to be able to stay out a little bit longer to get that one extra dunk in.
Yeah, so I think what it is actually, it's not the feeling of, oh, like, yeah, this was a great fight or whatever. It's more like when you're responsible for all these guys. Like if you get like 100% of the responsibility, which was the case for Elo, for example, in that war, and like in, especially for his little group of like Black Legion, then you feel responsible and you need to log in and you need to do this and like next day and the next day and the next day. And then you're usually not getting hit at your opportune time, right? It's usually someone else's time zone. So your whole sleep schedule kind of adjusts over time towards that, which totally sucks. And that in itself is already, even if you do the most healthy things, if you go to sleep at 5 a.m., every day, that's going to get you too at some point, right? That's not going to be a good thing.
Yeah, you're like circadian rhythms off.
Yeah, for sure. Many things get knocked off. But Pano brings up a really good point. Like it's you have a sense of responsibility to everyone in fleet. I think this is one of the main things that keep people from FCing as well, because it's absolutely real. And if you go out on a fleet and you lead people and they die, you feel awful and you feel like, oh, I have to give these guys their ships back because I'm the one that got them to die. But in reality, these people are joining you so that they can have an experience in EVE Online. They know that death is a possibility, but it really feels like it's like their ships are your responsibility at the start.
Carneros, you're like a CEO type. Do you feel that same pressure as a CEO, or is that an FC thing?
Well, I have more helpers than a usual FC does. Let's put it this way. The FC could have a support team of 3 or 4 backseat FCs or assistant FCs and a lodgy anchor and a couple and recon guys in their fleet. And they could all be doing parts of it. But a lot of FCs like the control and the perfection they can get and the additional security of not telling anybody what they're doing. And then they're trying to provide the Sinos on their own alts, and they're trying to provide the eyes in various places, their own eyes. And that just adds to the number of things they have to track and the pressure they feel on them and getting stuff, the more prep they have to do in advance. But as an alliance leader, I've got my finance team, and I have my logistics team, and my recon scouts team, and my and I have all these teams to do stuff. So I can just pop in, and I can occasionally do it myself, which is fun. The Mitanni doesn't usually do that, but it's I have a smaller scale operation, so I can do some of that stuff myself. Or I can just pop in and say, you know, can I get a volunteer to handle dropping this Fortizar, you know, for me in a secret location? Okay, great, thanks. Can I get a volunteer to stock this with a fuel depot? Okay, great. You know, I need volunteers to move dreads, you know, and they'll do it for me.
Yeah, I think like for like long term, that's what you need, like a proper team. If you wanted to work out long term as an FC. And I think like I'm pretty lucky, for example, Honey Monster, who's in chat, that's Dark Shines. He is one of our main FCs, and we basically split the workload. And we both know that it, you know, can get too much. And, you know, that it creates enough room for each of us to just drop out for a while and not do any strat ops, for example. Like in that campaign, I was basically just a supportive FC there. And then, you know, try to, you know, make it work all smooth. But it's not like the entire responsibility would, you know, last on any of us. So I think that's the healthy way to do it, is to have a proper team. You can't just do it solo. Not nowadays anyway.
Right.
Because expectations are also, I think expectations went just up over time. In 2012, it was fine if you just undocked and killed a couple of drakes. You know, everyone was like talking about that for weeks. But nowadays, like that's a...
They want better.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we had it a couple of times. I mean, just yesterday, a good example for that. We worked together with the Volta guys and so on. You can tell. So we joined them. Helping to kill one Rorqual. I didn't know it was one Rorqual. I thought when Marshy was talking about the target, it's a Titan or a Super. So I formed, and then I found out it's just one Rorqual. For our guys, one Rorqual, you know, we might not even form for that because it's too far, or whatever. Like, we have to take a guess, you know what I mean? But for smaller groups, for example, they're all happy about it. It's just like it's the difference, you know?
You're a victim of your own success, though. I mean, you went after Hard Knocks in their home, in Rage, and you took them out. And after that, it's like, it's all downhill.
Well, that is also true. Like, from a perspective on campaigns, like when we start a campaign, everyone would be expecting like everything to be prepped. Where are the 50 freighters? And are we dropping whatever keep stars and all the constellations, and like are we hitting the rest of Eve at the same time? Or, and I think the expectation is a little bit higher after that. Yeah, I heard a comment from, I think it was yesterday, from, was it Mitanni or so? I forgot who it was, but that there isn't like there aren't enough reasons for us to go to war, and which is completely right. And I think it's also a good example for like Rage. It just showed like if there's a good reason, right, the biggest loot pinata ever, people are willing to put in so much work, you wouldn't even believe it.
But there are very few firsts left, very few things that you can, very few mountains to climb. This is the point of Chaos Era, was to make the game more complicated, harder. In other words, for players that had already climbed Mount Everest, you needed to create a Mount Olympus on Mars that is, you know, 10 times higher than Everest. You need to give a much bigger challenge to these players because they've already done Mount Everest. And there was a neat analogy by Aerith, remember, when during the CSM summit, he was like, yeah, a lot of people have climbed Everest, but there's a lot of dead bodies freezing up there from people that couldn't, you know, weren't equipped to be up there, et cetera. Anyway, the analogy was played with for a while. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah, imagine the explorer Katia Say. Where is he going to go next to investigate?
Jove Space.
Jove Space came to mind too, yeah.
They might actually let him in there. Who knows? I mean, he's such a celebrity now. Our player of the year last year, Pando, you were the player of the year 2018. If you didn't catch that episode, that was posted just recently. The year-end stuff is being posted a little bit late because it's been edited and it's coming out now. And also, you can catch the Pando FC chats that we're talking about on TIS. You're going to see a bunch of episodes come out, like 3 or 4 of those. And then we'll be caught up.
I'm actually going to do one of those later today because I moved the date for it, because all US time zone guests would have issues, you know. So I moved it to Sundays 1800 instead.
Okay, cool. We'll really have to hurry up. Pressure on, just like an FC. I understand that. Having a team helps, right, Carneros?
Exactly.
And here we are. All right, so let's move on. What do we got? Carneros, what's going on in the north?
Just to back us up, high-level view for a moment, maybe this is the first EVE podcast you've tuned into for a year. Here's what's going on. So a few months ago, October, let's see, NCDOT and PanFam came through the North Bridge into Teanal on a relatively minor set of incursions. Just by all appearances, I'm not on their team, I don't have insider knowledge, by all appearances, just for some fun action, and attacked some of the dead coalition assets up there in Teanal. Short period later, Sort Dragon, who runs the dead coalition up there, called his friends at the Initiative and arranged for a little additional support and an opportunity to share some juicy targets back to the Initiative. So then it ended up being dead coalition and Initiative versus NCDOT, PanFam. And we get a little bit of participation, I think, by some Imperium SIGs who are just running around looking for anything that's, you know, anywhere that might be good content for them. I know I'm not supposed to use the word content, but they're still looking for some action. Then there's a surprise plot twist that happens. But before this point, there's some people were calling, you know, people have a propensity in the EVE community to name a war. So they were calling it sort of War of the Dead, maybe, because it started around Dia de los Muertos, and it happened, and it was with Dead Coalition. So it's, you know, there's a little romantic reason to call it, you know, the War of the Dead. And then, with this plot twist, at a CSM meeting, with a disagreement between two prominent, well-known CSM members, and then one walks out of the meeting, as described on the Meta Show by Pro God Legend, walked out of the meeting, walked into high command chat, said, "That's it, we're going to war, we're going to take out Sort Dragon." So it's not even a war, you know, it's not even a war against the dead coalition for Legacy. It's a war against Sort Dragon. So anyway, so they pull together their forces, and Legacy goes all the way across the universe to the exact opposite side with battle cruisers and engages Legacy Coalition. And action's been happening.
Not only that, but the Test has been at war for so long already. This was meant to be their break. They just got out of like a month-long engagement in the South, and you're just like, let's start all over again. Let's just keep this war machine rolling. And so they go all the way north to fight Darkness.
Wow.
And that's created some interesting diplomatic ripples, because you got people who are there to shoot one target and a different target appears. Are we allowed to shoot it? Are they allowed to shoot us? Are they allowed to shoot that structure or that jump bridge? If we have these targets on the field, do we have a preference of order or just shoot by distance? You know, there's a lot of little wrinkles that pop up and questions. And then diplomats have to talk to each other, and high-level people have to make prioritization calls, and then it gets passed forward. There's some alliances in EVE and some organizations in EVE that just go out and shoot anything and have fun, and they want to see ships explode. And then there are some that operate like a small government and have to do everything according to policy and strategic objectives. And you see a clash of cultures there.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, this is not the first war that Sword's been in the middle of, but I mean, if there's going to be a war over one guy, this is not surprising as far as Eve history goes. We talked about the decade just a few episodes ago, and he pops up in the middle of Money Badgers and the Russians, and then he pops up in World War B under the Honey Badger side, and he ends up in the North. He ends up making deals with the Imperium, which, you know, is supposed to be a good thing for the North to buy them some time, but the North didn't like that very much. So it's for all the diplomatiques that Sort Dragon has and what he's able to maneuver, he also is the target of a lot of anger. And so it's interesting to me that this is coming from Test, because there's an interesting triangle going on here, right? You have Test as part of Imperial Legacy Super Coalition, right? And if they're up there in the North, that's going to, on the against Sword Dragon, essentially. And you have the other part of that Super Coalition, Imperium, up in the North on the side of Sword Dragon. It does complicate things, doesn't it?
I mean, it complicates it a little bit. I think Carneros hits the nail on the head, though. It's going to be people saying, "Hey, who do we shoot here? Like, what's the protocol for this?" But in the broad strokes of things, it's easy. The Imperium is going to side with Legacy, right? What can Sword Dragon and Dead Coalition offer that Imperial Legacy cannot, right? So Legacy they share a border more or less. They're much larger. And they've got a few more FCs. So I think if push comes to shove, it's kind of an easy decision to make. But the Imperium are great allies. They're always true to their word. They've never broken an agreement. So I think they'll honor anything that they have with Deadco to the fullest. But I don't think they're going to deploy a super fleet to save them.
The Imperium doesn't have any deal with Deadco. It's just us deploying up there. And we didn't make any formal deal either. From the start, we said, like, we're not going to write anything down. You just, you know, got to trust us.
Is that the initiative?
We're working in your interest. That's in it, yeah.
Or Imperium.
So Imperium doesn't have any deals. In it doesn't have any deals written down. But when we committed, obviously, we treat it as if. Like, it's a gentleman's agreement, basically. But, like, in theory, goons could just, you know, roll in and kill Darkness and, like... the rest of a Deadco. So I shouldn't say GOTG. They rebranded, right?
Yeah, they rebranded. But that's okay, because GOTG was such an unimaginative name.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, no, but just to clarify, the deal right now is between the Initiative and the Dead Coalition. And the Imperium is a superset of the Initiative, you know, and Initiative's allies, but the allies are not involved.
Or involved with only small involvement, right? Like SIGs.
You also mentioned that Imperium will always, Imperium will always respect the deals they have and all that stuff. And we are part of the Imperium. So if things get really heated up there, like, I would say we can expect Imperium to be on our side, obviously, right? Which happened already. Like, they backed us up a few times. Because, I mean, if you look at the map, it's a tricky situation. Subcap wise, Test just has insane numbers. Like, we can't compete. Like, basically in Euro or later US time zone or whatever, it's in it versus Test. Like, we can't compete with those numbers. Subcap wise, like, how would we fight that? And we tried, but obviously they didn't appreciate it, going full on like crazy mode on Reddit and whatnot, and, you know, talking shit. Like, so why would we keep doing that? So we've moved supers there. And that's what they get for it, I guess, yeah. I know, like, PGL doesn't like it, but, like, that's the reality of things. We have to do it like this.
Pro God Legend.
Yes.
FC for chat, for Test. But there, I mean, Test has 1,001 reasons to not like you, because you bombed the heck out of them during Blackout and even after. In their home territory while they were trying to fight a war against Winter. So there's no love lost between you guys, is there, between Test and Initiative?
Well, so, I mean, if you want to talk about that, then you have to go even further with this damn Keepster in, remind me where it was, the Rocket X Keepster?
Yeah.
Wow. Snuff left it. We moved to finish it together with Snuff. And then Test moved all their Supers and Titans and everything and had everything ready to drop in. While they did some fishy stuff, telling us first, like, no, we are not on your side and la, 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 and we're not going to drop in or whatever. And then in the last second, like literally 10 seconds before we would light the sign or jump our Titans, and suddenly they let shine through, like, actually, we're just going to kill Snuff first and then we would go for your guys. Obviously, we can't compete with these numbers they can bring. So that would have been our Supers and Titans dead and them probably being all happy about it. So that incident, like, I personally wasn't too involved in that, but I know Shines was super mad about it, like how this whole thing worked out. And that's the main reason why, you know, Test wasn't on our list of favorites right at the top. That's why we, you know, showed up on the doorstep more than once, I guess.
But at the same time, a little while ago, like in the earlier in 2019, Initiative and a few SIGs from the Imperium also pushed like Dead Coalition with almost to the breaking point, right? Like you guys were just doing like small fights over there to the point where they very nearly collapsed.
Well, I don't remember.
Or is that overstating? Is that overstating things?
I think that's overstating. Like, we visit them every now and then, even when they're neutral and stuff. But I think even in the Stuka era, where we were hunting all day, every day, we weren't visiting them and over farming or any of that stuff. We didn't, like, try to break people with it. I saw that coming from the Panfam side more than anything else, to be honest.
That sounds like you, Elise, in 2015 when you were killing Brave and breaking it into pieces, forming Karma Fleet and Horde.
I mean, look back at, like, you remember that fight? Marshy set it up. They tackled like 4 or 5 Titans and Supers and stuff like this. And I felt like that was the breaking point, like close to the breaking point for Deadco at the time. Because I think if they, in their prime time or close to their prime time, if they then start losing Supers and Titans and there's like an overwhelming amount of hostiles dropping into your space, I think that's just that sign that, you know, now you're free to go. And everyone would just hunt your space. And we went in there and actually saved those Titans just because, you know, what's it? And what's the use for like another group to collapse? Like, we're not interested in that.
Strategically saving your enemies to make sure that they can fight you on the next day.
Yeah.
I mean, this game needs more players, right?
It looks like it's getting more players, right? And we see the PCU go up to the low 30,000s. Again, concurrent players at 30,000 feels pretty good. I think it's an optimistic sign. People are taking it that way. And you have, again, the Koreans who are filling in that usually very dead time zone of Australia. But before we get off that, I was just joking about PL and Brave, Elise. I hope you don't find that offensive.
No. I get to blame Ron Mexico for all the bad things.
Do you? You were behind him?
Yeah, I've always got a fall guy. Don't worry.
Because when I contacted you, I was writing the Brave story at the time, which is a huge story on this topic. I remember, because it was the first time I was dealing with you when I was writing you, how legalistic your answers were. And I was like, yeah, this guy's definitely a good lawyer because he's just completely danced around my question and he's not lying, but there's something in there, some invisible thing. But okay, so this is a very complicated war up north because you do have a lot of, and this is why we're calling this show the No One Expected the Legacy Inquisition, right? legacy going after Sort Dragon, specifically in the person Sort Dragon as the CSM broker, was a complete twist.
And I see people in chat saying like, oh, this seems like a really really bad excuse for legacy to go to war. And they're like, oh, it's so easy, nothing happened at the CSM. I guarantee you something happened at the CSM meeting. And that start, like, this is not just something for memes. Like, this isn't something just to get the Test Alliance to deploy and do fun stuff. I guarantee you there is something to this. And that Vili wants to go ahead and push Sort.
Obviously, I don't know what happened and stuff. I think if like other CSMs could just come out and say yes or no, that would be helpful.
Right? Let's get dunked on here.
Is it bad for the game or is it not? Nobody knows. But let's just assume Sword Dragon said something that's like, or worked against the team in a way that would be super bad for the game. Let's just assume. Like, then what Vili did and call them all there and so like make it a big deal and all that stuff, that's not the right way to go about it. Like, why would you do that? Because now he's probably more than likely getting more votes than before. So he's probably going to get the opposite result. It doesn't make any sense to me, to be quite honest. I think it was like probably like super spontaneous decision to just do this.
Well, we do know part of it, I think. And it's probably not just one thing, but it was probably a series of things. And one of the things that we know, we've pretty much zeroed in on it, is that Sword Dragon was against making these structures destroyable over one weekend. In other words, you had to wait 2.5 days in order to fully destroy a structure, which means that an alliance that got to form up on... if an alliance wanted to form up to destroy a structure, they had to form up during the week at some point, either to start the process or to finish the process. And a lot of CSM were against that. They wanted it to be 2 days or less so that you could start on a Friday and finish on a Sunday. And that way all your guys could participate. And Sort Dragon was publicly against that. And that was an interesting split. But there was probably a second thing that happened and then probably some frustration. And I think it, you know, the romantic in me thinks that Sort Dragon is sticking up for the defenders, right? Which might be him in most cases, right? So he's probably sticking up for his own interests. But in the process, he's basically thwarting what the rest of CSM wants to do, because we know it's NullSec heavy and there's a lot of agreement there before they go into meetings and stuff. So maybe Sort Dragon is defending the little guy, and that has just really annoyed people past a point, because they were making progress with CCP, or they thought they were, and then you have this alternative voice in there. That doesn't make that much sense, because you have Omeka, you know.
Why would shorter timers be better for big guys and worse for little guys?
I think the big NullSec groups wanted more action. So they wanted the ability to take something out in over a weekend, I think. Or it was the little guys that wanted that.
But why wouldn't little... Yeah, exactly. Why wouldn't little guys want that? Like, why wouldn't everyone want that? So, like...
People who want to destroy things want that. They want to be able to do it over one weekend, especially if they have to call people together to do it, and especially small guys.
So technically, I think everyone wants just to have the timers on a weekend, and the next weekend just would be too long. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's the only way to go. So if we would get like from armor to hull, just that's a 1 day timer, that would be fixing the issue. So you could have the first draft and then 3 or 4 days, and then the next draft and then 1 day left, and then you could actually time it so it's all on a weekend and everyone would have enough time and stuff like this. So I think that would be my obvious approach to it.
I mean, I think we can all agree that this is Killer Bee's fault, right? Because Killer Bee, I'm joking, by the way, I love Killer Bee, but Killer Bee stepped down from the CSM, which led Sword Dragon, who is the next person in line to come up. So this whole war, it's all Killer Bee's doing.
that's a 200 IQ play from Killaby.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. He wanted content in the north, didn't want to deploy, realized if he stood down in CSM, Vili and Sort would get into it and he could have a war just right on his doorstep.
Yeah, Vili is basically Killaby's puppet.
All right.
Not even Eve is that complicated yet.
Maybe in 2030, those are the plays we'll be seeing. But I think one last interesting thing to point out is this is not the first time that a sort of a war, or at least a set of skirmishes, has been prompted at like a, I'd consider the real life, the CSM meeting to be more of a real life meeting more than anything else. At FanFest, I think five or six years ago, Sort Dragon got into a spat with, I believe it was Pro God Legend. Maybe my memory is not serving me right.
No, it was Pro God. It was 6 years ago, I think.
But that started a war between two groups in EVE Online as well.
Well, what was it sort about? Of. It was kind of a war.
It was planned to be a war, but it actually ended up being the collapse of the Honey Badger Coalition. Yeah.
So what happened there, if you haven't listened to the Decade in Review, we did cover this. But Sort Dragon and Pro God Legend finally meet each other in FanFest. I actually think it was 2012 or something. And they do not get along. There's I won't go into the real life reason that they're fighting, but they basically insult each other and threaten each other in real life. And when Sort Dragon is interviewed, this is right after Honey Badgers has accomplished something. I think they just took over Delve Thunderdome, so they're on a win right now. So the Honey Badgers are led by Sort Dragon, XPL guy, and he's on live stream there at the convention. He says, well, EVE is built on wars, and Honey Badgers has decided their next war, and we're going after Nulli Segunda, which is Pro God Legend's team at that point. And he did that live on stream. He announced it like it was a huge announcement. But then a few weeks later, the rest of Honey Badger's like, we're not going to war for your personal grudge. So they totally fell apart. But Sort Dragon got the last laugh because in the middle of the Fountain War, Sort Dragon still held some territory in Fountain. And instead of giving it to Test, he gave it to Test's enemy, which was the CFC at the time, or Goonswarm, that was coming down to invade Fountain. So that's how that wound up. Very interesting, this EVE.
That was a great picture that McLeod put up as well. It had former CSB guards, Shadoo and Sword Dragon chatting at FanFest.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, sure. It's fun. I like laughing at it. It makes me happy. Always seeing Shadoo makes me happy. I don't know. Something about his Finnish face.
Those that can't see, it's Shadoo from PL and Sword Dragon sitting in the interview chairs with CCP guard interviewing them. And the caption is, I welcome the day my coalition dies. Sort Dragon FanFest 2013. By the way, somebody sent me a video for Kill 2, which is CCP Rise. You know him as CCP Rise. Well, he was a player before he worked for CCP, and he used to be a video maker, and he published a video that said, hey, I'm going to CCP, so I won't be making any more videos anymore. I'm going to be working with Ravy or Fozzy. It turns CCP Fozzy, who had just joined there. And as he's saying that, I'm looking at, oh, okay, interesting. This is the moment he transitions from a player to a CCP dev. And I looked at the date. And you know what the date was? January 2013. Anyone know why that date's famous?
No.
That exact day, the Battle of Asakai happened.
Really? Oh. Yeah, that's dope.
So now mentally I can say like there's pre-CCP Rise and post-CCP Rise. And I have a good milestone marker. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, no, that's fun. Fun fact. Okay, so what do we think is going to happen next in this war? What do we predict is going to come down the pipe next? Do we think the Legacy Coalition is going to move Super Caps over?
It's hard to tell. I mean, I think the chances are like 30% that they're going to do that or something. There's a big timer today, actually, for one of their structures at around 2000 I think they're hyping like crazy, which is always something I wonder about. They always call CTAs and go overboard, what we call like a beta op, which is like the third most important op. And they're just gone all in on this stuff. And I expect them to, you know, get more people involved, you know, other groups. I think the northern guys, so like in NCG, that's where NC Dot and so on are staging, I think they're moving a lot of other people in there to put more pressure on GGG, I mean, Deadco. I'm not sure if that all, you know, is it like a grand strategy or any of that. I guess we'll see. But if I would have to make a prediction, is you know, Test is kind of, you know, they have to stay. So I would say they're gonna stay for at least a month, and then you know, maybe they claim victory because they killed two or three battleship fleets.
Yeah, I agree with Pano. I don't think the legacy, or I don't think Test is going to bring super caps in there. The interesting wrinkle to me is there is a sizable super cap fleet that they could potentially work with from PL, NC Dot, and Pandemic Horde, that, you know, they can move over pretty easily and have a sizable super fleet. But would those groups want to work together with supers on the field and stuff like that?
Oh, they work together all the time. I mean, that's what Vili and so on are doing, right? They're working with Panther.
But are they going to work together? Or will Vili say, yo, Vince, drop your supers here with me and let's take this? Does that happen?
100%. Like, so I think for Panther, the most important part is like how many init supers are tackled and, or, you know, Deadco supers are tackled and could potentially die. Is it worth moving? That's the number one. And then do you think Vili is going to say like, no, my honor codex is getting violated here. Like, I have to like hit Panfam now because they've got supers on field. Probably not, right? So they're not going to complain. If Panfam brings supers, they're not going to say anything. They're going to be all happy about it.
Because there's very little love lost between Legacy, specifically Tappy and PanFam groups. So, I mean, it's an interesting little crucible to have these guys all working around in. My prediction is similar to Pando. They're gonna take some Satya or Fortizar or something, and then be like, we did it. Like, they're gonna make ADMs drop by Cloaky camping all through Declan, and then they'll be like, we got them, boys. Let's head back.
Well, what's their stated goal up there? I mean, it is to knock Sword Dragon out of the CSM, and they calculate they can do that by ruining his voter base, which is kind of odd, but they think they can ruin his voter base by taking away or putting pressure on his Siberian group and his Chinese group. That's Ranger Regiment, who are Chinese, and Siberian Squad, who are Siberian.
It's a super nebulous win condition, right? You can make 50 people leave and be like, leave the coalition and be like, yeah, well, they no longer have that threshold to get sword elected. So we won, guys. Let's deuce out, I guess.
So the guys that remain, though, they will be making sure 120% that they're going to go vote for Sword Dragon just to fuck with Vili. You know, so my prediction is that Sword Dragon is going to get more votes next turn than he did before. Because everyone who doesn't like Vili is going to vote for Sword Dragon. Or, like, depends on to what level, obviously. I hope still that people vote for, like, smaller guys like Ixuki and Stitch Caneland, but hey. But, you know, in general, I think that's probably going to boost his numbers more than anything.
Oh, absolutely. And then also, if he wants to go, but we're just talking narrative, though. Like, narrative-wise, the win condition is easy. You get 50 people to leave, and then you can say, hey, we won. Let's leave on.
It's not well. And then the election happens, and Sword Dragon gets elected. You know?
That election is coming, too, by the way. Less than 3 months.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, right? Yeah. So, and then also, so Test are wondering, like, oh, why are you defending Deadco? And then for whatever narrative they're fighting, be it like CSM thing, or be it like bots, or be it whatever the spin is, right? But we were already involved. We were already up there helping against a PanFam, which is, you know, we don't need a narrative to fight PanFam, really. And like, pick a better timing, dudes, you know? Wait for us to be done with our shit and then move in. And then you can wonder why. But to get involved in a conflict that we're already in and then ask us why we're there and helping them, that's weird to me. It doesn't make any sense. Because that was the reaction from PGL. He asked, like, if we're moving back or whatever. Right? But no, we just, you know, switch position, basically.
My only hope is that it's authentic, right? That they're not faking it. And by all accounts, this looks authentic, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I probably, Vili. So funny part, actually, we talked about the FC chat thing earlier, right? I did have Noraz on, who is from Fraternity. They fought Legacy not too long ago in a extensive war. And then Vili dropped in because he had to defend what I said about Vili at the time, which was that on the CSM, he is probably not as open-minded, not as, open for other opinions, which I kind of corrected into saying, okay, he is an FC on the CSM, but what other FC is now on the CSM to challenge his opinion? Which is funny. It was like a week before this whole thing happened. You know, and then suddenly this comes, and apparently someone challenged his opinion, and yeah, there you go.
Maybe you started it.
I would like to take credit for that, like, play, but
Pando lit the fuse.
So. I don't think so.
You lit the fuse that lit the fuse to the dynamite. Well, anyway, it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. We like this. This is the best part of commentating on EVE Online, is when a lot is at risk. And we don't know how it's going to end. That is kind of what we live for.
Yep, should be fun.
Yeah, I will say it's great to know not know what's going on. It's really exciting to see how this plays out and see what's reality and see what's just speculation and just people being memers.
You know, I do have to be honest though and say it's very hard for me to get excited for those big wars, because in nowadays Eve. It's all about those numbers. Right? It's all about the numbers. As soon as caps are involved, it's all about Titan numbers. If it's subcaps, it's pure subcap numbers. Who got more numbers? That's all it is. It's very one-dimensional, in my opinion. So
yeah, it's not good. We were just talking about this. I was talking with a friend, Exxon Fang. We were talking about a different game called... Oof, I forget the name of it, but it's the... It's the one that Grayscale went to, CCP Grayscale.
Albion Online.
Thank you. So CCP Grayscale is the guy that put together a lot of stuff, but one of the main things he did that you would know him from is Phoebe Jump Changes, or at least he was part of that team architecting it. He came out to explain it, and then he disappeared and went over to a different company did a lot of work for Albion Online. And I think that's where, if I'm not mistaken, there's a PL guy there. What's his name?
Doom Chinchilla is there. There's actually the game seems to be like 30% former EVE players.
Doom Chinchilla is who I was thinking of. Anyway, the point is that they seem to have dealt with N+1 in a pretty effective way. I don't know if it would work for EVE Online, but essentially, the more people you bring, the less important they become. So after a certain point, I think it's like 50 or 200. I forget the number. The actual players get weaker. They get nerfed because there's too many of them. And I thought that was an interesting way. But they have dealt with or are dealing with N+1. EVE Online has not dealt with N+1, which means if the people who are bringing more fighters will probably win the day. A good FC is like a knight on a chessboard. He will bonus your side maybe 10 or 15%. Of the population. This is according to Asher Elias on his podcast. He said, a good FC will make a difference, but at a certain point, a good FC cannot make a difference.
I think that's a pretty great statement. Asher, great FC. Also had used to have an FC type podcast similar to what Pando has. This was like a few years ago. I really liked listening to those.
Oh, the Asher Hour.
Yeah, the Asher Hour is one of my favorite. That's why I meant to say this earlier, but that's why I really like what you're doing, Pando, because it fills a void that I had from the Asher Hour being gone. It's not the exact same at all, but it hits all the right feels. So it's one of my favorite podcasts to listen to.
Pando's got a great podcast. We'll get it out to you, I promise. And then there's also a negative 10. I'm like totally sweating and embarrassed that it's not out yet. So I appreciate the patience.
Most people watch it on Twitch anyway, I think.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I say. And if you don't, you should. But there's also another podcast called Negative 10, I think. And it's more of a smaller group.
Smaller than 10.
Less than 10, I think is the
name. Less than 10. That's how it's.
Oh, not negative 10. Oh, I thought it was a PL podcast.
No, it's a small gang podcast.
It's smaller than 10 or less than 10 just means
less
it's like
10.
Less than 10 man gangs, small scale.
Now it makes
sense. I mean, I'd love to take credit for that podcast. It's also great.
I was kidding about the PL because PL's ticker is negative 10, which is pretty cool. Which negative 10, for those that don't know, means that you are a complete outlaw. You're at the worst phase of an outlaw in Empire space. And that's why PL has that.
It's a rank of your relationship with the high security standing forces. So it says that in civilized space, you're considered a persona non grata. So negative 10. Yeah, it's a great ticker.
But these guys are less than 10, which is different. It means the small gangs, basically, a few guys at a time. So anyway, those are the podcasts that are still available. Asher Hour is no longer available, unfortunately. But I wanted to bring this up because I don't think I can plug this enough. And that is Elise Randolph here made a presentation at the last EVEGAS. And I can't stop talking about it because it was that good. And if you want to know the history of doctrines in the game, you need to see that presentation from him. So look up EVEGAS 2019, Elise Randolph. I forget the title of it, but the whole thing is really good.
Well, thank you. That's a nice little plug. I had a lot of fun making it. It was a really fun stroll down memory lane. It took me like, I don't want to tell you how many videos I watched from just Eve files, just random videos with no commentary from like 2003. And they were wild.
Yeah. So that you know, he goes from the beginning of Eve to now and tells you all the doctrines that were popular and why. And it's illuminating for people who are into the military history of Eve Online. It's an amazing thing. So once you watch that, then listen in or watch Pando's FC chats and you'll be totally caught up on what it's like on the military part of the game. But you'd have to watch the Continuum of War, which is 2017 presentation I made about the last 5 years, and listen to the decade in EVE Online that we just did. There's two episodes of that. And then
you guys have like 15 hours of homework to do just to get caught up on EVE Online.
But then if you do all that, then you will be able to contextualize like the war history of EVE Online, which is no small feat. All right. Well, what do we do next, Carneros?
Well, do we have any predictions for what CCP might do in 2020?
You know what? I want to be optimistic and say 2020 is going to be better than 2019. How about that?
I kind of liked aspects of 2019.
Yeah.
I know you don't. I know you.
So my prediction is going to be that Team Talos is going to continue good work and they hopefully create a couple more opportunities for content creators so we can go out, entertain our people, and then hopefully touch on the big issues, Citadels and Supers and Titans. Those two, if they touch that would be nice.
I agree with the Team Talos, but I want to say that we can't expect every move they make to be perfect. We need to give them permission and space to occasionally try something and then have to tune it afterwards. So keep that in mind. Let's not burn them at the stake on Reddit if they try something and it doesn't work immediately.
I think my prediction is that Q3, Q4, like towards the end of this year, towards the end of 2020, I think we're going to start seeing a lot of really nice quality of life changes that come about strictly from CCPers being able to play the game at a high level the same way that all of the players are able to, which was a change that was made in December of 2019. So you're going to see like more of these devs and more of these people are going to start playing Eve. They're going to say, hey, you know what really grinds my gears? Why don't we fix this, put it in the pipeline, and then maybe towards the end of this year, we'll start seeing the fruit of those labors. But I really do like what Team Talos has done. The filaments were really, really fun. I think that was a perfect iteration of like the Chaos Era local change. You know, like it's the same thematic thing, but it doesn't feel bad. It feels great for everyone involved, right? So if you're a guy out in space and you see this 25-man gang come in, you're like, oh, I can see this and react to it and fight them. And if you're in that 25-man gang, you're like, oh, there's people out here I can shoot without having to go a million jumps. This is great. So it's a real feels good for both sides involved. So I really like those. I hope they stick around. I also hope they become like Y337 filaments or something like that. So we can have the Yeet fleet name.
Wow, predictions are very difficult, especially in a time where there's very little telegraphing of what direction CCP wants to take the game. But yeah, there'll be experiments. There'll be good ones. There'll be bad ones. There'll be player reaction, player engagement. I do think you'll see a bigger population in Eve than you have in the last year. Maybe even bigger than 2018, which was supposedly our big year with all those big fights and everything. It didn't really move the needle on population. The last thing to really move the needle on population was making the game essentially free to play. But what I've seen, maybe since the Korean localization, if you look at EVE Offline and you look at the red areas at the bottom, there's a genuine increase in new players entering the game. And you see a genuine effort from CCP as we explained during the show, New Player Experience, where we had CCPers on talking about how they were handling new players and handling the beginning hours of the game for people. They're putting a lot of effort and they're having success and they're pushing players further and further up the funnel, which means that the person that would have quit after a half hour of playing is now sticking around at least to the hour mark. And that gives them a chance to survive longer, to finally get hooked and play the game. Can you scroll down a little bit to the red areas? Because that's where the new players are. Yeah, you can see that hump there. If you look at the past year, you can see there's a huge hump there that happened after Korean localization. And I think that if you're looking at not the big middle finger, but the whole hump, we're looking at graphics on screen and McLeod is circling things and stuff like that. You have that initial burst, which is a giant tower. But after that, you see an incredible increase that's sustained. And that is new. We haven't seen that in a long time. So we'll keep our eye on the population in general of EVE Online. And it might not just be new Korean players that are coming, but hopefully it is, because that's a neat time zone to fill in. But it might be players all across the board as EVE Echoes gets talked about and people want a fuller experience than just their phone. They may funnel into EVE Online and you may see a lot more people captured by the good work that's being done by CCP, at least early on in their experience. So more people, I think, this year.
I have a couple predictions too. And one is there isn't a posted timeline or directions by CCP of where they're going with the game. But there have been signals given off by Hilmar, CCP Hilmar, of kind of what he's thinking. For example, resource depletion is on his mind. So I expect that they're working on designs They've already shown one piece on that, or two little things they changed. One is they made mining anomalies in NullSec smaller, and two is they removed two common elements from asteroid belts, Spodumane and Veldspar, no longer occur in NullSec asteroid belts. So this has started. I think what they're also going to do next is they're going to say, okay, if you mine out this anomaly, it will respawn again, just like normal, but now it will respawn in a different location, and you have to go find where it is and move there. And it won't be in the same solar system, is my guess of what they'll do. So then you'll have to do, you'll have to move your stuff around, and you'll have to, for example, this will be hard on renters who only have one system and can only operate in one system. I think a lot of rental programs don't have that anymore. They'll let them, you know, operate anywhere in the total space. But I think there's going to be some changes like that coming up. And in CCP, we'll see how that works and how that happens. And maybe hope mining ships get killed on gates or something. I don't know. I think there'll be some experimentation with that type of thing. And it might change the degree of buffer that various NullSec entities feel like they need to maintain around their core territory. So it won't affect their core territory as much, but it'll affect their watersheds, for example, their buffers. I'm just guessing at that point. But I do expect there'll be some changes coming. I also think that the PvE content will change over time. I think the Triglavians have more tricks up their sleeve. I think CCP will continue to craft new PvE experiences based on their evolving artificial intelligence, and there'll be more things to do and try along against the Triglavians. And I think over time, I don't know about 2020, I think this is more of a 2021, 2022 thing, but we'll start to see more precursor factions besides the Triglavians. It's the reason why the ship types that you see for the Leshak, for example, that's not a Triglavian battleship, that's a precursor battleship. Because the precursor is going to be a category, and there'll be more members of that category than just the Triglavians we know.
I don't know about that one, because the guy I think mostly responsible for the Triglavian ships is CCP Rise, and he seems pretty busy these days with just placating advanced players who want more complex gameplay. But who knows? He's on Team Talos now.
A new new set of precursor ships is also a challenging thing. I like that.
You're right, dude. I hope so, Carneros, because I love that kind of advancement. Did Pando get a chance?
Sorry, did I get a chance with what?
For the predictions?
I kind of predicted that 2020 is going to be better, and Team Talos is going to go do like good shit, and they're going to touch one of the big issues, which is Citadels and Caps, right? Or Citadels and Supers.
What do you think the political landscape's going to look like in the game? Will there be any shifts this year, you think?
Well, unless the soft system changes, I don't see the political stuff change much. There's always going to be some changes, of course, but I don't see many changes.
I will predict right here that Initiative will break off of the Imperium. Any comment on that?
Well, I cannot comment on that.
And I will further predict that the landscape will be totally shuffled. I think PL will maybe try something new in order to survive and leave NCDOT, and probably go the way of Skill U and Trigger Happy. I think Imperium will... I don't know what's going to happen with them, actually.
Hopefully we don't go the way of Skill U. I don't want to go that way.
You don't want to go all that way.
Yeah, no, I don't want to go full Skill U.
And I don't know. I'm totally kidding. These are the most ironic predictions I can think of. Like,
my
it wasn't that crazy.
They're not that crazy though, right? Right? There's some truth.
It could happen. My prediction is that Horde's going to throw its weight around a little bit more, which is, you know, no small statement because they throw around their weight pretty heavily right now. But I think it's going to move from calling it PanFam to Horde and Co. or something like that. Like, I'm pretty sure Horde is going to be the big power player in that relationship. We're going to wear all the pants. 2020, the year of the Horde in NullSec. I think that's what it's going to be.
Well, also, I also think that you'll see, maybe you'll see more smaller groups. But what I hope doesn't happen is being smaller group for the sake of being a smaller group. I hope that there's definitely some kind of real incentive to do that. I also feel like HiSec is going to continue being dominant. Like right now, HiSec is doing very well. There's a lot of money to be made. A lot of groups participating. It's like a new era of incursion goodness going on in HiSec. And I do not think that CCP is going to throttle that as much as it dismays NullSec because it's imbalanced, right? Like, wait a minute. HiSec's supposed to be safe but not lucrative. NullSec's supposed to be lucrative but unsafe. Well, it's not, right? NullSec is not that unsafe. And it's still very lucrative. So HiSec needs to be, or essentially is very safe and very lucrative. But it's also not safe because if you're actually making the money through Triglavian stuff or conduits or whatever, that's pretty intense gameplay. That's not safe money necessarily. It's not AFK money or I'll look at the screen every once in a while money. It's like I'm playing the game money.
I will say CCP probably does not get enough credit for this in 2019, and I'm probably a part of the reason too. Like, I don't think I gave them enough credit for it either. But HiSec became not crappy to live in for a NullSec or LowSec type person, right? There's lots of avenues for making good ISK, not just like 2 million ISK an hour from level 3 missions. Good. We're talking like NullSec type ISK from the invasions. And from the Abyss sites. And also, like, wars in HiSec feel way less crummy. I've got an alt that's in wars in HiSec, and the fights are like 40 on 40, like 40 on 60. Like, it feels really, really good to fight. It doesn't feel crappy. It doesn't feel like this is just like PvP light. It actually does feel like good PvP. Feels like there's stuff to fight over. Shooting pokos and shooting structures and stuff like that. It's actually, it hits all the right buttons for what I wanted out of PvP, which I didn't think I'd ever say happening in HiSec, and that's happening right now.
Yeah, the stories are interesting too, right? Because when you have incentives and you have colliding desires, basically, you're going to have drama. And that is what makes Eve really what it is. Like, it makes it unpredictable. And that's when it gets very interesting to watch and to know about. And for us to decipher the stories and to make sure that people can understand how rich the dramas are.
One of the best parts about HiSec if you look at NullSec, if you look at some of the big power players in NullSec, they haven't changed in a decade, right? Like they're still all over the place and they're really refined and they know how to handle themselves. But the people in HiSec are just kind of like having all of this fall into their lap. So they make horrible mistakes and they screw up a lot. So they're easily punished. And it's very funny to watch on the sideline as someone who's like kind of been through it before, just to watch it all happen again and watch these like giant HiSec groups just fail cascade because they don't know how to deal with some of the pressure. So it feels a lot like Eve did like 5 or 6 years ago or even longer.
One last prediction. I think Bastion becomes a new Morsus Mihi. Swells up with players. Yes.
What? No way.
Enormous amount of firepower and their supers.
My philosophy is don't grow too big because then it's more work for the CEO and the leadership team. No, it's not that easy to, yeah, no.
Okay.
Dear Lord, people.
We'll see. I think this is what happens. A couple of CCPers join Bastion because they can now, right? They can actually play as themselves. That drives recruitment to the ceiling. And Carneros is unable to control the growth of his alliance.
I control the recruitment, actually. I'm the one who actually does corp recruitment for us. We used to have a team, but maybe I have control issues. But if someone else proposes a corporation, I said, why should we let them in? How will they fit our culture or whatever? No, yeah. It's better if I do it, but no. But I do remember the CEO of Morsus Mihi, Vuk Lau. And I remember working with him on, I was thinking it was CSM5, but it might be 6. It was one of those two. I remember him. I'm still friends with him on Facebook, and it brings back old memories. But dear Lord, no.
Vuk Lau, interesting enough, that was his real name. He didn't realize wasn't supposed to put his real name in the game. So that was his real name. And
don't say that.
Oh, sorry. Was I nuts? Well, he admitted it publicly in a video.
I know, but you know, people never use your real name.
So it was an interesting name. I thought he was doing some Star Trek thing, but it was his real name. And he was in charge of Morsus Mihi, and his number two was actually Mirana, who is now the number two in Goonswarm as the diplomatic chief. So there's some roots there. And we were talking,
Never get her angry at you. Just never do that.
I think I have a few times, but she's great. Anyway, I was talking to Headliner last night. Open comms, it was an after show, and I decided to visit because Headliner was in there. And I just threw this out. Maybe I should throw it out to you guys too. What was the single biggest event in the last decade, like momentous event that changed the direction of the game? There's many, but what was the biggest one? And Headliner was like, well, the Northern invasion called World War B, or when Morsus Mihi collapsed because all those players went into the CFC, creating it basically. So I thought that was very interesting. So we were talking about how important Morsus Mihi was to that period.
Yeah, and in our decade in review, I think that's where I was like leaning towards as well. Like that whole DRF versus North thing, solidifying what the CFC as a power player for the next. What time is it now? Because they're still. They really haven't come down off that high, so that's a huge thing.
Yeah, well, they hit a low after the Northern invasion there. But there was no question they were going to survive if there was no pressure put upon them, and there wasn't. And even if there was pressure, you can't break up groups as easily as you could. You can't break up groups that are prepared as easily as you could or used to. You can still shot, like I think CO2 reminded us of that. I think ELO, we know that ELO is a significant player that attracts players. So when he's gone, there's less attraction. There are certain groups that live off one guy, but then there's definitely groups that prepare themselves for people going missing. I think Imperium is definitely one of those, or the Goonswarm is definitely one of those. They have a council of people, but who knows? You also have a guy, the Mitanni, who's been around a long time, and he has the time to be that figurehead and give that stability to those players. And that's one of the essentials to that. But also all the people around him are very regular. That I don't think if they disappear, they definitely have contingency plans. So
Goonswarm has a deep leadership bench. They have layers and layers and layers. So they have people to step up and help. It's great. And the Mitanni, he's been there a long time. He looks young. He's not as young as he looks. But he is young and he'll still live for many years to come. So it's a sweet spot.
He bathes in blood. Was that character in the? Never mind.
Exactly. It's his Malkavian roots to make a World of Darkness joke.
That's it for predictions. I don't have any other predictions I can think of. I'll think of a ton afterwards.
You should make a full-on prediction show, and then write it down all at the end. And at the end of the year, you can just come back to it and see who was right, who was wrong,
what worked, what didn't. I've done that. A lot of the And I have gone back and checked like how accurate I was. And I've done it for other people too. Like, okay, you said this and where did we end up? And everybody hits and misses. So it's not really that, like nobody gains credibility by being right because nobody's 100% right. So it's kind of not worth the investment, but I prefer to go back and review. I think actually this really, I watched a bit of the meta show yesterday and it starts out with Brisk, who's here at TIS too, saying, we're not like those other shows. We don't look back. We look forward. And I'm like, is he taking a shot at us? What's he doing? And then, and he's like, so we're just going to do predictions. And I'm like, okay, just do predictions. Those are kind of easy and fun. And you can see they don't really mean much. But doing a review is important because it becomes a milestone where you can say, okay, I can't go back and read all that stuff. I can't go back and research. But what I can do is listen to this review about what happened that year and get caught up. It's almost like a recap, right? So it prepares you for what's next. And we did it for 2019. And we put January, Valentine put 3 episodes of effort in that, plus 1 for CCP. Carneros and Elise put in a bunch of effort for that. Furthermore, we did a whole decade. And I think those are incredibly notable efforts to recap the last decade and the last year that will prepare you for this next year and the next decade, I think.
So then I want to put out another prediction, and there's going to be the podcast war this year.
Here it comes, right?
versus meta show. And then maybe, I mean, the crazy guys from Open Commons might just chip in and, you know, who knows what side they're going to be on.
They're third partiers, those guys. They're just heavy partiers. You know, what's interesting is we've talked about media wars to generate interest. You know, I think it's a little too self-serving, a little too self-facing, because we're supposed to talk about what other people are doing. And it's not about us up here. It's about Pando and other people that are out there doing stuff. That's always been the way we've kind of looked out at the shows and stuff. So for us to get into any kind of like war that references us is just dumb. It's why we don't post on Reddit as talking in stations or try to push weight that way or any of that kind of stuff. I think we all agree on that, right?
Yeah, I think you guys are doing a great job in general. Like in general, like over the years, you guys also have improved like the whole quality of things. And, you know, you've got your team going here. And yeah, and I think you are also taking a good stance. Like, just, you know, it's hard to stay completely neutral. Obviously, Carneros is in the Imperium, and Elise is Panfam and stuff like this. But you know, you guys are, you know, doing a good job being as neutral as you can be. So yeah,
it's rough some days.
Doesn't mean we don't argue behind the scenes, right? I'm high sec now, by the way. I'm no longer an NC dot. But thank you very much, Pando. But yeah, at the end of the day, the review is important. I will stand up for that, and I think that you should take advantage of the fact that we did basically 5 episodes on reviewing, because I think it's important to look at where you've been to figure out maybe where you're going. And to put it in context, because everything gets more interesting with more context. I think it's important to know where you're at. Otherwise, this is all pixels and lasers and pew, pew, pew and jousting and means nothing. But if you understand the rich context, the hours that people have lost sleep over, the intensity of their will to win, that's what makes this real. And I think if you see what people have done, the incredible things people have done, including FCs and how they put their health at risk in order to win or to get ahead in this game, you realize that it's a real commitment. Oh, Elise fixed his mic.
Yeah, sorry, I'm a little under the weather, so I sneezed like really aggressively and I smacked my mic and it fell on the floor. And I was like, oh, no, it's fine. And then I started talking and everyone was talking over me. I was like, wow, rude. This is the one rude podcast I'm on. But no, just no one could hear me. But I wanted to dovetail off of what Pando was saying about how we try to be impartial. It is really difficult, but we do try really hard. So thank you for that. And also to dovetail off of what Matterall was saying with regards to like reviews, I think one of the most interesting parts of EVE Online for me is the stories that the players make, and they're just incredible. They're very fun. There's something that you can't like recreate anywhere else. Like the gaming world is littered with games that are good and fun to play, but there aren't many games that have stories like that we create. So I think that's real fun.
I don't think there's any game.
All right. Do we have to review news here, or is that, or did we cover it all?
We didn't really go into the news. We could do a couple things on that. Sure.
Let's fly through it just to give people a little more.
All right. There is a PvP group called Trumpet Mouth Cavalry, and they've been based out of Wormhole Space, but you do see them operating in NullSec or LowSec, or, you know, occasionally for, they'll come out and do PvP and go back home. They've been operating out of J172431, which is a C5 class wormhole, and their home was completely burned and looted in the last week and a half or so. And sources are estimating to us quietly that approximately 250 billion was taken, along with a Sotillo, a Tatara, and 5 Fortizars. So that's a quarter trillion ISK and a handful of expensive upwell structures. Anyway, we attempted to get someone from Inner Hell to come on the show. That's always challenging because we do our show in English, and they don't have too many English speakers, and we don't have too many good Russian translators to work with. But anyway,
who's Inner Hell in this story?
Inner Hell is a different wormhole-based group, and apparently, they were involved in, on the offensive side in those fights. I don't know what their normal relationship is, or if there's cool politics or a backstory, but that's one of the things we would ask them if we can get them on the show.
Okay, so they're the evictors. They're taking Trumpet Mouth Cavalry out.
I don't know if they were the decision makers or if they were the muscle, or there's story there. I want to hear what that story is. So let's not jump to conclusions yet. The next news item, the first super capital to die in 2020 was a Revenant class super carrier, which is rare and expensive, and then belonging to Brothers of Tangra. And apparently he was killed by the legendary Black Ops pilot, Frederick von Hohl. That gentleman is known for carefully crafting and planning assassination hits type thing. So he went after that Revenant and got it.
He's like the Red Baron and the Jackal combined.
Amen. Well described from what I can see. I don't know him, but from my point of view, that seems like really accurate. And then the second was the second super capital to die was a Ragnarok class Titan belonging to Fraternity that Trigger Happy got in Venal.
There it is, death to supers.
Well, you know, the problem is if you just take super caps out of the game, they are a favorite target of a lot of people. Earlier in this very show, Pandarelica talked about the fact that if you get in a Nit fleet together and go after a Rorqual, they're gonna be like, oh, just a Rorqual. We wanted a Titan. So you have to keep that in mind too. They make juicy targets. What's juicier to hit than a Titan? A faction Titan. Okay, great.
We actually also lost a Titan. What was it, 2 days? Yesterday?
Yesterday.
I forgot. I wasn't there, but yesterday. So apparently the story, there was a group doing a Sotillo. And our guys wanted to go hit them. And they jumped in a few Titans, like I think 5 Titans or something. But so the FC, it was actually Shine's Titan that died. The FC who dropped had to work with people he usually doesn't work. So they're not like that, his daily like guys to help out and stuff. So he asks three times, apparently he asked three times if there is the secondary sign already on grid. They said yes. So he drops in, kills the cap set on grid. The sino goes up, which is a dread bomb coming in. And he's like, all right, light the sino, jump the rest in. And he's like, all right, sino's undocking. And it's undocking next door. So yeah, in the time the sino made the way, the time was already dead. Like it died the second the secondary sino landed on grid. And yeah, that's a dead time.
Yeah, those guys have been messing out on low sec for quite some time. They're actually getting pretty huge, pennants out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they've always been fairly active, I think. We've like fought them a couple of times, but yeah.
This goes back to the earlier discussion in this episode of why a lot of FCs just try to do all the parts themselves, like all the sinos, all
correct.
The recons.
Yeah.
You know, it's more pressure, but you know, they can be more assured of the outcome of the fight, and that the outcome is important to a lot of them. Anyway.
So I'm being told right now, someone's listening, actually the sign was in system. It was just not on grid. So whoever, you know, was tasked with having the secondary sign already just thought, well, it's going to be fine as long as I'm in system. No, it's, you know,
so this is
time critical.
This is direct fallout, again, to the sinusoidal changes that say you can only light a sino now on 4 Force Recons and 4 Black Ops battleships, and that's it. It's such a narrow, it's such
yeah,
a
exactly.
narrow set of ships that it results in broken cap and super cap escalations that would have gotten bigger.
Yep. Before the sino changes, that rag would have just lit a sino. Everything would have been fine. But yeah.
Anyway.
It happens. Already
replaced. And there was one other piece of news, which was a little bit different. This is sort of metagame news. Many of you have used Dotlan. Fantastic tool, fantastic website, evemaps.dotland.net. Is a daily tool for me and many other people. Daniel Woolery runs it. He and I were interviewed once together at EVE FanFest in Iceland. He probably doesn't even remember it. I sat right next to him. He's like, who are you? Anyway, it was fun. he also runs EVE Maps, I think, and he just want to thank him for his recent investment this week in new hardware to improve the performance of those tools. Thank you very much, Daniel. This is a service to the entire EVE community, and we appreciate it. Even CCP uses it.
They do, actually.
Amen.
There was one dev that was like, do you think CCP has like an incredible amount of tools that they use in order to get their information? They don't. They use Dotland too. And I thought, oh my gosh. So we're all in it together, devs and players.
Amen. That's all I got for news, though.
Was there something about the trigger happy test started to reinforce a neutral Fortizar in Y0?
In Y0 Tech BVN in Veil of the Silent, my old stomping grounds. I don't think there's a lot of upwell structures being reinforced in low sec and in null sec over there. I don't know that it's a big deal. The fact that trigger happy is on one side and test on the other, there are people who are trying to make trigger happy into some kind of big, cool, new entity that we talk about a lot. There are also forces in trigger happy that are attempting to not make them be talked about a lot. You rarely will see them on a podcast or a live talk show, for example. I think that that's some personal agendas happening. So I kind of thought, since it's not, yes, there was a dread fight and one side lost 25 bill and one side lost 75 bill. Okay, 100 bill, that's like what a Titan was a year ago, a couple years ago. Let's call it, yeah, I don't know if it's newsworthy.
Someone in chat is asking, what's up with Kenda? I'm not sure if that's actually news yet. So I don't know if I should be talking about any.
What's the pre-news?
So it looks like Kenda has gone inactive. And yeah, so I just hope the trigger happy guys, I think they got a couple of good FCs to keep it up and stuff. And yeah, it's basically the... So for those who don't know who Kenda is basically a, let's say...
Founder?
Yeah, the founder and like the father of
public face.
Trigger Happy as a group. Yeah, so it's not good news for those guys, but I think they have a lot of FCs already doing stuff, so it's going to be good.
Yeah, they got a lot of people from Snuff and a lot of just neutral people that came over. I know Pittsburgh is in Trigger Happy too, so.
Isn't Harvey Skywalker in there too?
I'm actually going to have two Trigger Happy guys on later on FC chat.
Today, right? What time?
I'm actually pushing it to 1900 because I thought this, like talking session, I thought you guys going to just do an hour.
Oh, it's supposed to be like right now. Oh,
yeah. No, it's going to be in like technically it should have been in 20 minutes, but I'm going to do it at 1900 instead. It's fine.
Oh, okay. Well, if you want to start, we'll raid you and all these people.
Yeah. Sounds good.
All right. And the last thing is, I was looking at Signal Cartel's post inside Reddit there where they talk about EVE Rescue 2019, a year in review, and they graphically illustrate how many people they've rescued.
It's easier to navigate and run around in HiSec, LowSec, and NullSec than it is to navigate in wormholes. Because the map is constantly changing. The connections between wormholes is constantly changing. As wormholes connections age out and respawn or are rolled by putting a lot of mass through them to weaken them. So you have to constantly sort of rediscover the map around you by scanning them down. And people get lost, or people enter a wormhole and then don't have an operating scanning system and, you know, whatever. But one of the options you can do, and this is groundbreaking and unexpected and emergent player behavior, is that you can contact the EVE Rescue Service this organization, and they'll help you. And they're apolitical and neutral.
EVE Scout Rescue, they're called.
EVE Scout Rescue. Tell us what their stats were. They posted.
They're like the St. Bernards. If you're like living in the Alps or whatever, they're the St. Bernards that will come out and save you and drag you back to civilization if you get lost and are under an avalanche of some sort. This was their biggest year. And there's a couple things to know about them. One is that they do this service, right? They put up a board where you can apply to say, hey, rescue me. And they will find you. I don't know how they do it, but they will find you and lead you out. And they rescued, it looks like, more people than ever. So the service is getting more popular. They also have a second thing that is incredible. And we had a show on it a year and a half ago to 2 years ago. And it was an AI that they developed that I don't know that much about it. I need to go back and listen to that show again. But essentially, they developed an AI, like a co-pilot that talks to you while you fly, which is pretty amazing. And I think those two technologies together is what helps them figure out where you are. You know what? I'm going to do a show on this just so we can get it like from them on what it is. We're talking about the EVE Scout effort, and that's put together by Signal Cartel, which is the corporation in the game. And Signal Cartel is now led by Thrice Hapus, and he is a new leader after Minxy stepped down. She was the longtime leader. And the stats, I don't know how to interpret these stats, but it looks like I actually don't know how to interpret these stats. But, you know, maybe we'll put this together, package it up, and explain it to you once we understand it better. But they had a really good year. They're rescuing a lot of people in wormholes. It's nice to see alternative gameplay. These guys aren't about PvP. Unless they're attacked, they won't attack anyone. But it's nice to see their efforts rewarded by the community actually using their services. So that's nice to see.
They also, Signal Cartel also have public bookmarks for Thera, if you guys go through Thera at all. So that's always super useful. You don't have to probe out the exits. Before, they would tell you like which things to probe down, but now you don't even have to probe it down. They've got an updated link of bookmarks that you can just grab and zoom in and around Thera. Hopefully you don't get killed by Volta.
And they are totally helped by this new change that is Alliance level bookmarks, which are actually bookmarks ACL that you can bookmarks. Hand out ACLs, right? They didn't call them Alliance. Oh, okay. Well, there was an effort to get Alliance level bookmarks. The technology was out of reach for a long time. They finally, CCP finally created this mechanic where you can give bookmarks out in a group, in a batch to people, and limit their use by an access list. So it's access, that's what it is, right? ACL?
Access list bookmarks.
So access list bookmarks really have helped their efforts with Thera, I believe.
That reminds me, actually, yesterday I had to use Thera to get to that one rocker and actually propped it myself, old school. Didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Apparently, it's a technology that's going to be even bigger later because it's just going to really open up doors for emergent gameplay with access lists. We'll talk about that a different time, but it's very interesting. And they are the gatekeepers of Thera in a certain way. They allow the public to know how to get in and out of there, which is another service that they do. We'll talk to them and reacquaint ourselves with them. Of course, Katya is in there. I think Noisy might still be in there. A lot of really great, kind of legendary players are in Signal Cartel. So there's that. All right. I think we made it to the end of news and the end of the program. I want to thank Pando for hanging out with us. And of course, Elise and Carneros. One word about our sponsors. I reached out and said, hey, if you guys like talking in stations, you want to see it keep going and you want to see more stuff done, help us out with the Patreon. That's patreon.com/Matterall. And the call was answered by some people. We'd like to see it answered by even more people. We got a new Patreon at the Angel level, and he or she told us that they have a job that's just kind of boring, but they live on their phone and earbuds, and they listen to Talking in Station, and they feel like they're a part of EVE Online, and they're current on what's going on. And that kind of a message is like golden for us. That's we live off that.
Yeah.
Very nice message. And it's great also that it's a Patreon, and even at the highest level. So it was just amazing for us to get that. Other people like Elange, who's been a longtime supporter, moved from but he went to the maximum level of support, which is awesome. And so did January Valentine, who's actually part of crew. Now, a lot of people who work at TIS actually are the Patreons. Like, we don't pay people, but people pay us to work here. So anyway, join them. It's a great group to belong to. You get a few special privileges. And we are going to definitely this year make sure that Patreons get even more stuff than is usual. So you'll have some benefits coming at you. We're deciding that really soon, but it might be backstage content that only Patreons get or something like that. Something that's extra. Everything else will always be free and public and everything else. But we want to do something special for people who are financially supporting us. I don't know. We got a lot to do this year. We've got a lot to do. Oh, one last thing. We have a new show starting up. It's in the works, but it's going to be about EVE Echoes. And for those of you that don't know, EVE Echoes beta is closing. And I don't know when the game is coming out, probably later in the year. But EVE Echoes had, I think, over 500,000 people beta testing it, which is no small number. So if EVE Echoes is something that interests you, we will have a regular show on it. And we'll talk more about that in the future once it gets up and running. We already had one episode with the interview with the producers of EVE Echoes. We're big on EVE Echoes. We think it's not the little brother of EVE Online. We think it might actually end up being bigger than EVE Online. But whatever it is, it's going to be very, very much associated with EVE Online. So I hope these two things synergize and help each other out, these two games. All right, guys. Thanks very much. Elise, Carneros, anything else?
Thank you.
Nope, just happy flying.
Yeah, and happy new year from us here at TIS. That's it for today. We will see you next time on Talking in Stations.